ladies and gentlemen. You have waited all week.
Yeah, Boogie Page. Throwing it down for things BMX is ready. I know I am. Check the ATB Airways. Let's kick it. All things BMX. It's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if we need some info, they got the best. Like and subscribe. Kick back and relax. And it's all things BMX. It's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if we need some info, they got the best. So like and subscribe. Kick back and relax. All things BMX are streaming to you. To post up on your couch, screencast to YouTube. It's gonna be fun. It will be a blast. You gotta do much, but kick back and relax. They coming to you live from a studio, or they might be at the track, man, you never know. So don't go anywhere when my rounds are done, cause the show's just starting, let's have some fun. I said it's all thanks BMX, it's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. So like and subscribe, kick back and relax. I said it's all thanks BMX, it's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. So like and subscribe, kick back and relax. All things BMX got the boogeyman's back, so I wrote them this track to send some love back. JT, Melissa, Chris, and Paul, DJ Damon, kinda get it, entertain y'all. And I wonder who they'll have on the show as a guest. I bet someone good who's gonna impress. Guess I will just have to wait and see. Let's get the show going and start the party. I said it's all thanks BMX, it's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. Like and subscribe, get back with me. I said it's all thanks BMX, it's a BMX show. Unlike the rest, if you need some info, they got the best. Like, subscribe, get back and relax.
Welcome to episode 174, The Metal Man. This evening we have Greg Esser with us. Greg is one of the early BMX legends on the East Coast and across the coast. The name Esser of BMX on the East Coast are synonymous for the career spanning from the earliest days of BMX in Florida into the latter days in the early 80s. Greg is one of the most decorated riders out of the East Coast and one of the heavy hitters also hanging out there on the West Coast too. Owner of numerous BMX racing championships and number one, Greg rode for many top companies we're going to find out this evening in bike shops, and his family now runs and operates Metal Works. We're going to have a good time this evening, so make sure you get your questions into the chat room. Greg's going to be joining us on that Danger Snack video satellite line, and the ATB crew is coming to you tonight. It's just me. Melissa's out with an upper respiratory infection. Let me say that again. Melissa's out with an upper respiratory infection. My face swelling has gone down, so I can now see out of my right eye. And we're limping along here, folks. But I'm hanging out with you this evening in the ATB studios at the DeSoto News Desk. Right now, we're going to be having it going on. Hey, you guys get your danger snacks, okay? You can use the discount code SHITSHOW, and you can get a discount on it when you're ordering danger snacks. It's the snack. That's the difference between hauling ass or dragging ass. Don't forget, you can support the show by visiting our Buy Me a Coffee page or sending stars right below. They come right into the show. I want to thank everyone that's done that so far. It really helps out and goes a long ways. Chris is off. He's on that Mighty Moe's BMX cruise. And we were going to try to do a check-in with him, but they're too far away for reception, and they don't want to check in. They're having fun on the cruise, eating cake. Again, as I said earlier, Melissa's off with an upper respiratory infection from her Gate 9 custom number plates perch. She is upstairs on the plush couch in the Gate 9 studio that's located upstairs. The show's chat is sponsored by BMX Rocks Photography. They were busy these past few weeks. Looking forward to seeing them this weekend, or next weekend, sorry, at Richfield Park. And the chat question for you, brought to you by BMX Rocks Photography. What pro do you think has the smoothest gate start in BMX? You guys put your answer in the chat, and it's also going to be popping up on our social media pages here. It just did a minute ago. You can answer there also. Tonight's lightning round is brought to you by 110 Nutrition. Our show doesn't happen without the support from Answer BMX, Die Job Apparel, Bombshell Racing. all the links that we talk about this evening, you can find in the show notes, and you can also find them in the links below once the show wraps up. Before we jump into our interview, I want to take a second and talk a little bit about this event that ATB is putting on. We're doing our it's the longest name you can have for an event, and we're pretty excited about that. We have our Iron Bell Brawl Hole Shot Challenge Championship. This is the ultimate race of BMX bikes, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be going on September 30th out at Ridgefield Park, and I just want to take a moment and make sure we plug this, because this is we've done some fundraising, but this is one of the first events we're doing with the help of the folks over at Ridgefield Park BMX. And all these awesome sponsors here, and I want to highlight a couple of them right now. Coming in today, DB Sports World's donating two $50 gift cards to their bike shop up in New York. So you can win these at the event. And this is pretty cool. This just came in at the wire here. So back there where Detroit Velvet Smooth is hanging out, he's guarding that Bombshell 20-inch Park bike. It's one of their whips. That is one of the award. Well, it's not one of the awards. We're gonna be raffling off anyone that gets in the event. You automatically get an entry into winning that bike. It's a 20-inch Park bike. It's their whip, so we're pretty excited about that. We're gonna have that bike out this weekend, actually, at this fun race. It's gonna be the Bob Warnke Memorial Scholarship Race / Paul Pinn Award. That's right. Check this out right here, folks. You can win a Paul pin. And if you guys don't know, Paul is our sound guy here at the show during the winter months. So it's going to be a good time. Got a couple good weekends coming up out of Ridgefield Park. And again, we're looking forward to everybody on the 30th coming out and joining us for that whole shot. It's an evening race or event, not really a race. DJ Damon's going to be handling the tunes for us. We got laser light, fog machines, inflatables. Dude, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And winners are going to go home from the Hack Shack with their own sprint stand. The only difference is theirs is going to be painted in a very custom gold finish. So the winners in each event or each category class, sorry, they're going to have their own custom gold sprint stand that they're going to be taking away. So big things happening, you guys. And without further ado, let's welcome in our legend of a guest this evening. Greg, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. Actually, really looking forward to this.
Good. We're glad you could make it. Man, we've been looking forward to this for a while. A lot of people telling us to get you on the show. We're glad we could pin you down, get you on here. As we start every show, tell us, Greg, how did you find the sport of BMX?
I'd say it was probably watching on any Sunday. I think that's where the whole thing really kind of began. And of course at the time with my parents, they were involved with motorcycle racing. So my brother and I and all of our friends, of course, were mimicking motocross. And, I think that's just kind of how it started. And, I think Ernie was kind of doing the same thing out west, at roughly the same time. And I think everyone can agree that the catalyst was the movie On Any Sunday. You know, I know shortly after that, here in Florida, some of the other people that had kids that were involved with motorcycle racing, they actually started a deal that was here locally called the Street Bicycle Racing Association.
What? Can you hold that up a little closer for us? Oh, that's awesome.
That is the trophy I got in 1972.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
So, you know, so I think it, you know, I think when, you know, they have the argument, East Coast, West Coast, where it all started, I really believe it all started about the same time. I've seen pictures of in the 50s where they're doing it in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think that, again, I think the catalyst was the movie On Any Sunday, the very beginning of it. So that's kind of how I found it. It found us, you know.
Nice.
I still remember the date of the very first organized race down here. And that was January 26, 1974, as far as NML, NBL.
All right.
What was... I think And I believe a few months after that is when Sarasota began.
Oh, now there's a big debate with Sarasota and Waterford Oaks up here. They've been going at it for over four decades now of who's the oldest. But I know Alice is listening. She's going to tell me. They've done.
Sarasota's probably the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a track that I raced at that was before it, and it was at a motocross track.
Yeah,
and
very that nice. Was the,
yeah.
So when did you fully get into the you had the Street Biker Association in 72? When did your amateur career, we'll call it, when did that start?
January 26, 1974. That was it.
All right. And what were some of the tracks back then that you were racing on?
Well, when it all really got going, it was, we would race four times on a weekend. Mm. We'd go Friday night was like BMX 84. And then Saturday morning was at another track in Pembroke Pines. Mm-hmm. And then Friday night was South Florida Kartway. And then Pembroke Pines Saturday morning. Saturday night was BMX 84. And then Sunday was Kendall, West Palm, wherever. You know, and that's how that it went like that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got moved around where there Kendall went to Friday nights and we'd go there and be there until 3 and 4 in the morning. It was crazy. You'd have semis in 14 over open. Mm-hmm. On a Friday.
Dang. What was the moto count like? 60, 70, 80, something like that then?
Oh, no, it was much bigger.
What?
It was crazy.
These were locals?
It was bigger back then than it is now, I believe. Maybe not. Well, every weekend's a national. So, you know, it wasn't like that back in our days. The mm-hmm. nationals, you know, you'd start with the, you know, Easter Classic kind of deal. And then you went through the summer. You had the NBL Grands at Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the ABA, USABM, whatever you want to call it, in Oklahoma. But then you had the rest of the time. Then it was break time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now it just never ends, which I think hurts the local stuff.
I was going to ask. So you were saying these moto counts were that high on locals, correct?
They probably weren't as high because they didn't do 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old. It was, you know, 6 and 7, 8, 9, 10,
okay.
So forth like that.
Okay.
You know, but you had a lot of riders.
The rider and count was probably.
Like we'd go to Kendall and mm-hmm. we'd be there till 3 or 4 in the morning.
Nice.
Racing, not just. It was crazy.
So we probably had the same kind of rider count. It's just the moto count would have been, the classes would have been larger because they were combined classes back then.
Correct.
What's in your, well, again, we'll refer to it as your amateur career. How long was it before, you know, you got started and you sort of realized things were picking up and you scored that first, you know, sponsor, supporter? How long was that and who was that?
I would have to say it was probably Trailmate.
Okay. And who was
and, that? And it had, I guess, Byron Friday rode their bike for a while. And, of course, and like I said, they were made over here. They were made over on the west coast of Florida. And I met them, and then that kind of got the ball rolling. And then... This is for me. This is kind of a cool story, part of the history of stuff. In 76, I went out to L.A. This was after the second Orange Bowl race, but the race when, you know, all the West Coast guys came out,
mm-hmm.
and I went out there, and I was at DG, and Chuck Robinson sent me and Jeff Botema to a place called North Brothers to pick up some stuff because North Brothers is who made DG's bikes and stuff. And while I was there in my head, I'm like, why can't we do this at home? it doesn't look crazy, you know. And so I came home and I talked to my dad about it. And because of all the motorcycle racing stuff, there was a company down here called Motocross South. I'm sure the letters ring a bell. And they were a minicycle company.
Okay.
So we went, then we knew them from that. We went and talked to them, and they made the first MCS frames for us. And then it evolved that that the one partner in that, in Motocross South, they kind of were shutting everything down because their kids were no longer racing. And so my dad and Rick Connery started MCS, Motorcycle Specialties, and that's how MCS began. All with a trip for me going to a place called North Brothers with Jeff Botima.
Oh,
and Cook Brothers was right around the corner.
Okay.
From them.
God, now we're all seeing these names come back. The Cook Brothers, Botima. We had Toby on last week, as you know, like he was mentioning these names. It's pretty cool to hear all these names are still, well, they're coming back and they're around still. So you guys create the MCS and you're making BMX frames now at this point?
Yeah, frames, forks, handlebars, you know, all of the stuff.
Okay. And
You know that picture that you got? You just went away from it. There's a story in that picture that you just showed of me and a guy standing at an RC car race.
Okay.
That's not it. That's...
It'll take me just a second to get to that because I have to flip into the settings on it. And let me see if I can, it'll let me go back here.
There it is.
Yep.
That guy that I'm standing with is Adi van de Veen.
Okay.
Just by coincidence, he races RC cars. I was in Holland racing. Garrett Deuce came to the race. And there was Adi. Adi was the 1980 Dutch BMX national champion. And I met him then. I have a picture somewhere of him and I sitting together at a race in Holland in 1980. It's crazy. I mean, it's a crazy small world.
Yeah. And we were talking about the MCS frames. What year did you guys get started and geared up with the production on them?
76. 76. 2 months. It was within 2 months of me coming back from out there.
Okay.
In August 76.
God dang. So you guys, you ramped up pretty fast then.
They were already ramped up, and that's what they did.
Nice.
It just went from mini cycles to bicycles.
All right. Very cool.
It was actually pretty seamless at that point, and it just took off. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Were you still considered amateur, or had you moved into like the pro ranks at this time?
Considered amateur.
You're still considered amateur.
There was no, at that point, there was no pro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What was the pinnacle class then that you would have raced in at this time? Like,
well,
something over or something like that?
Well, it would have been 14 over, but
what?
You know, then they, you know, when they first started in 76, it was just 14 over. But then as it went along, it became 15. Then it was 15 over. Then it was 16 over, 17 over. So, you know, then it started going by just basic ages. But before I went pro, I think it was 16 over expert.
Okay.
Then pro after that.
What were the dads doing that wanted to get into the sport? Were they just lumped in with 14 and over?
There weren't any.
No, there. Oh, okay. All right.
As crazy as it sounds, at that time, that was the beginning. So you didn't have all of that. You know, you had the parents that came out that brought their, you know, their young kids out.
Okay.
And, you know, they would scream and yell at them all day. You know, like they knew what they were supposed to be doing, you know.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of how that's a whole nother deal.
I guess that hadn't even hit me that, like, you know, when we refer to like first generation, that yeah, they really weren't parents jumping in it, you know, it was just you guys just forging along.
You know, and then every now and then you'd have a father's race, you know, and you'd have six dads get up there and four of them crash, you know.
All right.
The new, that's, you know, that's, and the other thing that's, for me, what is cool about, I guess you want to call it the beginnings of the sport and stuff. Virtually all of, quote, the guys from back in then, we can get together and we can sit down and it's like we've never been apart. And I don't think today's group has that and will ever have it, because there's a certain part of the sport that all of us were part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's that whole thing, that camaraderie that makes everything, you know, what that is or was or whatever you want to call it, you know?
Yeah.
For me, it's cool. Cause I, like I said, I go and see, I'll go out west and, you know, race my RC car and some of the guys have come out and it's like we were never apart.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, and of course the, you know, the busting of the chops continues on and on, and it just, it goes and goes. It's crazy. The stuff that people remember, there was an article that made it to BMX Plus magazine that my brother and Magoo instigated. It was about the Canebrake dog.
Okay.
We had all these guys here at the house and from out west, and my brother and Magoo made up this story about a Canebrake dog, which was about a dog that the alligator poachers used. I mean, this whole story was made up, but these two laid it out so thick that they all believed it. We drove them out to the Everglades at night and said, if you go out there, now you might be able to see one, and, you know, all this crap. I mean, it was crazy. Well, a year ago, Harry sent me a text.
All right.
Hey, remember when you guys were busting our chops about the Canebrake dog and all this stuff? 30 years later, he's remembering this.
Yeah, the BMX brotherhood that you guys have, I mean, it's all in the sport, but that first gen, I mean, you guys were the foundation for the sport. That, yeah, you definitely have that, in common, that, you know, the next gens, the mid schools and new schools, they're not going to have that. So I can see that's definitely something you would definitely hold your guys' group together. And like just hanging out with Tracer and some of the other people I've met, I can see that's a big thing with you guys.
Yeah, Tracer's a great guy.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Got to hang out with him. Got to hang out with him in his hometown. It was really fun when Melissa and I were out there for a national. It was a good time. We'll get back to your amateur careers. You guys start building the bikes. Were there other sponsors that you had when you were an amateur, like bike shops or parts comp? I mean, you guys were making parts. Like, was there any, like, did you have other sponsors aside from MCS while you were racing as an amateur?
Oh yeah. I mean, I guess you had, you know, grab on grips, gear leathers, you know, you had, you know, things like that, clothes, apparel. But man, I tell you what, I've gotten old. It's hard for me to remember. I've hit my head a few times.
Have we all?
But you did. But it, I mean, fortunately for me, because of MCS, it kind of opened the door for me to be able to travel around. And, you know, hell, I had a driver's license at 16. You know, we were off driving to races.
Yeah. I know that was for myself. I wasn't in the sport at 16, but when I got into the sport, I was like, my car just took me to places to ride. That was always the cool thing.
Yeah. Well, you sure don't see. You don't see that too often anymore.
No, it's kind of like driver's license age and girls. That's like, there goes most of the riders.
Yeah, Yeah, but I mean, as far as the sport is concerned, you don't see, a group of kids piling in their car and heading off, in our case, to Atlanta.
Right.
We would load up the car and put six of us in a car with our bikes hanging out of the back and drive to Atlanta. Say that's, 10-hour drive.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And your parents let everyone go.
Y'all didn't have cell phones or social media to know where
No.
you were. I think the closest thing I could say was I had found the sport by 19, and we would jump, my buddy and I would jump in the car and go to the Christmas Classic. So from where we live to, which is an hour and a half north of Metro Detroit, to Columbus, I think it's like a 4.5, 5 hour drive. But we didn't, even then we didn't have phones. Once we got to the hotel, it was 1-800 collect, and we talk real fast and hang up, so I didn't have to accept the charges. Hey mom, we're here. All right, everything's good. I'll call back later. And hang up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. You know what? I kind of jump out of line as far as like your career is linear wise, because you're doing the RC thing, and I actually have personally, I have two friends that got me in the
Just
sp yeah, that's all.
two friends.
Just two friends that do RC racing, but they both transitioned from BMX racing. And back when we got into riding, it was BMX. We would ride park and trails and everything, right? So these guys got me into it, and they both transitioned into RC. And they've commented that like the knowing how to flow a backside from racing has helped them a little bit in the RC. Have you found anything from your days of racing and riding that's like carried itself over into the RC racing?
Other than it doesn't hurt when you crash, no.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You seem pretty involved in it. Like, are you, you? I mean, you took off to Holland to race. How long have you been in the RC racing?
Actually raced RC cars when I was racing BMX,
Okay.
and then when I was done with BMX, I went motorcycle racing. And I quickly realized I can't afford to do both. So I went, I'm going motorcycle racing. When I'm done with that, I'll come back to RC car racing because it's not really age restrictive. And never thinking that I'd road race for 20 years. But when I got done with that in 03, I went back to RC car racing, and that's what I've been doing since. And having the time of my life.
And when you
We actually leave Saturday for a race in Italy.
for the RC racing? Wow. And I just wanted everyone to know this is the when you were talking about the motorcycle racing, this was your racing right here.
Yes.
Pretty wild stuff. We actually have a friend up here that used to race that too. You said you're headed off where again for your all right, so
Going
you're
to Italy.
all right, so you're doing this at a pretty high level.
No, I just go around. I will go anywhere in the world and have my butt kicked. I
Okay.
am having fun. And Alex is on the verge of being faster than me now. A little bit of talent. And so me and my wife and Alex, we go racing. I mean, this will be our third trip to Europe this year.
Oh, wow.
But you take everything on the plane,
Yeah.
except fuel at the other end. You just have that set up and you go.
Are these events you're going to, out of the country? Are they like a national? Are they like a World Cup level thing?
Well, it's called the European Nitro Series.
Okay.
Guys from all over Europe and stuff that come. It's quite competitive.
Okay.
I get my butt handed to me. I'm okay with that. I don't care.
You're having
I'm
fun.
having
There you go. That's what it's about, right?
Well, don't kid yourself. I care.
We had a indoor here in Michigan for that's where my two buddies would go. I'd go up there and hang out with them, watch some of the races. And these are what they considered locals, and they're pretty competitive. It was, it's pretty fun. Is the RC, like this racing, is this a, is that an expensive sport? Not just the travel, but like the actual sport itself.
I mean, I guess it is.
Is it?
But no more than anything else.
Okay.
I mean, there's plenty of people that spend more money at the bar on Friday night.
I owned one for 8 years. I'm probably well aware of that. Yeah.
I mean, it's the thing is with RC car racing, the better you get, the less you break.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not, you know, the bad thing about RC car, when it's just as with anything, I guess, is the initial getting into,
mm-hmm.
you know, but once you've got the stuff and you've figured out how the things work, it's not too crazy, you know, mm-hmm. can be. I mean, you can throw stuff at it and break yourself, but you don't need mm-hmm. to.
Very fun.
There's, you know, in the end, you have to drive it. And if you can't, it shows up real quick.
How does one hear about these events with the RC? Is there a club or a local track you hang out at, and then you kind of find your way and work your way up?
Yeah, basically.
Is it?
You go to, yeah, pretty much, you know, just using you as an example.
Mm-hmm.
You talked to a friend of yours, you went to this indoor thing, and hey, that's kind of cool. And then pretty soon the three of you are loading up in the car and you're heading to, you know, West by God, Michigan, somewhere mm-hmm. to some other race. And it just goes from there. I mean, we went so far as that my wife and I, we found some property by accident. It's about 2.5 hours from here where we live. And we bought the property, and it's got a house, and we built a racetrack on it.
Fun.
So we, you know, so we go over there, and that's our escape from the real world. We go over there. We don't have cable in the house, so we're not watching news and hearing all the horrible crap that's going on in the world, you know?
Yeah. So does your wife have a car that race?
She did. Mm-hmm. And then we had Alex, and that ship sailed.
Okay. All right.
Now he's driving.
Very fun. Well, shift gears from the RC, because I want to touch on the motorcycle racing. There's been a lot of comments in the chat about your career in motorcycles. So Mike Rodriguez put in here, Greg, and excuse me, because I have to look to the off screen to read this. Greg Esser racing his Honda at the Road Atlanta AMA 250 Grand Prix in 1987. Esser was one of the longest standing veterans of the AMA 250 Grand Prix. The Floridian raced in the series from 1985, when he scored his first top 10 finish in Loudon, to the last year of the series in 2003. It's 19 seasons of professional racing. Esser actually got better in the latter years of his career. He finished inside the top 10 of the national standing 6 times. His best season was 1997, when he earned 3rd in the championship race behind Rich Oliver and Bobby Keith. Esser's best individual race came in 1999, when he finished runner-up to John McGuinness at Daytona. Esser is one of the riders who quietly tailed an impressive career of results, which he can certainly be proud of.
That was nice. Very nice. Thank you.
Yeah.
It was a good time. You know? It was, I wouldn't say it was a career. I would say it was a hobby that paid for itself.
Okay.
And it was good. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And same thing as, you know, it's the same thing as BMX. You have the camaraderie, and you have mm-hmm. this group that you're with. You know, or kind of click's not the right word, but you know, and you make this a kind of made it a traveling circus kind of deal, you know. And the same stuff. You got pranks going on all the time. You know, we had the, you know, pranks going on here at the house and the BMX stuff. But, you know, even traveling around, we had a, this went on for almost a month. We were driving from down here. We were actually heading to New Hampshire to race. And we're driving, and the box van that we were driving sheared off all of the lugs off the rear wheels and shot the wheels off across the interstate and so forth like that. And so on the side of the road, we got everything fixed, threw all the parts in the back of the truck because we didn't want to leave them on the side of the road, you know. Mm-hmm. We get to New Hampshire. We take all the parts out, throw them in a garbage can. Well, the very next weekend, we had to drive to Minnesota. We drive to Minnesota, open the truck up. There's all the parts in the back of the truck again. we throw all the parts away again. Next weekend, we're going back to Wisconsin. We get there. We open the truck. There's all the parts again. Somebody grabbing the parts, and they were waiting to the end of the day, and they put them back in the truck. We drag them around again. Same old stuff.
Hey, Grace, all right, we've got quite a few questions in the chat, and I'd like to jump in there if that's all right with you to do our chat sure. check-in. All right, well, we want to do our chat check-in and say thanks to BMX Rocks Photography for sponsoring our chat. We have lots in here, so please bear with me. Again, I'm reading screen right, so when it's acknowledge everyone jumping in the Rockford Rippers BMX team. Thanks for joining us this evening. We've got lots of people viewing tonight, Greg. So everyone's commenting early on in the chat. Where we're going to start is some of the people replying to the chat question. Who has the smoothest gate start? Craig Reynolds, Corbin Shira, Joyce Dauday. Do you have somebody, Greg, that you can remember or you see now that you think has got the smoothest gate start?
Well, the one that pops into my mind now is right now is Daryl Young.
Yeah. Okay.
From back in the day. Yeah. it as far as a gate start that was instantly explosive, mm-hmm. I would have to Greg Hill.
Greg Hill, okay.
I mean he would go from zero to explosion. You know, we'd practice starts at his house and he'd go from just boom. Yeah. It was, so I would say that, but the smoothest I think is Daryl. Maybe Stanley Robinson.
All right. Good stuff. Yeah. Stupidazo says it was Corbin. Rick Carter says hi. Mike Melvin says afternoon. Guy to my, man, I always mess his last name up. Guy,
Tom Sikowski.
Yes, thank you. He signed in and listening. Thank you, Guy. And Jimmy Graham, along with William Prince, I'll ask that question here in a second. It's about one of the tracks you guys raced at. John Cruz says, sure miss your face. Good to see you representing us all, Haskins. In Prince, in there. Randy Morrow says legend. Sure miss seeing you at Okahili. That's from Michael Lynn. Jim Boskow, good evening, everyone. Jane Cardoza is checking in. She said fond memories of the mud in Redditch track in the 80s and hot shots.
Yep. In England. Yep.
Yeah. Also, I've had this come in quite a few times from people. So I'll circle back to that because if they're following along, they know where I'm at in the chat. They're echoing that there was very few dads that raced and even less moms that raced back in the day. And Jerry Bonza Field said, man, my parents would just drop me off at the track. That's it. Rodney Miles says Greg for the gate start. He's either saying for gate start or he's hollering Greg at you with many exclamation points. Hubbard BMX Raceway says, hi, Greg. I never forgot the first time I saw you race. 1980, Cincinnati Gardens. Matt Harris pro debut was taking center stage. Regards your friends from Ohio, PA border. Paul Spadowski says, good evening.
That race.
Do you?
Yeah.
See, it's amazing how the things we can remember, isn't it? Let's see here.
Oh, so I won. I mean,
Mike Miranda says everyone should know that Greg Esser is the greatest BMX pro hotel made pickup hero.
I'm not going. Not touching that.
All right. Brian Fell says, very much appreciate the early talks with Greg and with George Esser and the continued talks on when I stop by Metalworks. Yeah. Which your display, you guys made the display for Shadow, right? I think that was, I think so.
I don't know. I mean, we would do little stuff through Brian and Jeff, but I don't know.
I think so. Brian, let me know. Cause I think he told me when I was down in Florida that, like he set up the one thing and I'm pretty sure he said you guys made it. And that was pretty rad.
I don't know.
Paul Spadowski saying people are racing RC drag cars and betting big money on them, like real drag racing.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. I've caught a few of those videos. Firecrackers in the bathroom pranks at the house from Jimmy Graham.
Real quick, you know, when Greg was talking about that,
mm-hmm.
you know, he sounded like it was just a couple firecrackers. No. We would lob 150 in the bathroom. I'd hold them. My mom would light them. In the door they went, closed the door,
yes.
Went off forever.
Nice. Ray Gomez said, I forgot world champions. We'll talk about that in a second. Zach Goss is checking in with us. I'm trying to get through these here. So William Prince says, Hans Nissan smoothest. Esser built my prototype. Terry Tenet said, you built his prototype for him. That's right on cue. Melanie Esther says, you're going to tell the story about your firecrackers and your mom.
wife chiming in from the living room.
All right. Thanks, Fel. I had it mixed up on who made that display. Sorry about that. Let's see here. Cammy Langland says, look at the movie star on the screen. And Brian Fell says Hill's head was literally smoking down the hallway. So we had a couple questions to ask you about, I think it was Mike and William Prince wanted me to ask you about the DC Hyatt park we used to race BMX at and then the flat track afterwards. And that actually came up a few times in the chat. So when was it, like, you know, what was the track? Where was the track? And then the story behind it.
Well, it was a motorcycle track here in Pompano, Hyatt Cycle Park. And they had a motocross track. They had a short track, quarter mile dirt oval. And inside the dirt oval, we built a BMX track. And so when they didn't have short track races, we had BMX races. And when the BMX races were all done or earlier, we start having, quote, short track races. You know, small oval, just going nuts. And that's, you know, how that started. And that's, you know, Jimmy Graham, who's still racing today. When we first, I told you, you know, when MCS first began.
Mm-hmm.
Well, at that time, it was right here, just down the road. And where the shop was, there was a, like an alleyway. And it had a, you know, a wall. Well, my brother and I, when we would ride from the shop back to the house, we would jump off this wall. That's how I met Jimmy Graham. Him and his brother lived in the house right there when we would jump off that wall. And so we became friends then. They started racing, and Jimmy's still racing today. I mean, it's, you know, it's, mm-hmm. there's this fraternity of, you know, of people.
Yeah.
You know, still around. Bill Prince, I put up with Bill.
don't we all?
I see him shaking his head right now.
Oh yeah. Where'd that one go? Here, I had one more from, I'm gonna find that question here. It was from Mike, and he wanted me to ask you, Mike Miranda. Oh boy, where did it go?
Oh, this is gonna be bad.
Sorry, I had it pinned, and then there's a lot of stuff going on in the chat, so I apologize, you guys. He wanted me to ask you about not the firecrackers. Sorry, it's going to take me 1 second just to find it. I wanted to make sure we ask it. Oh boy. Well, I'm looking for this.
It might be safer not to.
He was asking about a couple of your guys' friends. Whatever happened to Jamie Barrows and Kerneski Bullard? They say it
Bullard.
Right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Jamie passed away. What, 6 years ago now, maybe, from colon cancer. Kerensky, I believe. I haven't seen him in a while. He stopped by here one night, maybe a year ago. I wasn't here. Melanie talked to him for a bit and said he was going to come by, and hadn't come by since then. So, you know, kind of lost touch. Mm-hmm. You know, went through some tough times, I guess, you know, but those things happen.
So when we were talking before, oh, that
go all of them, but
Before we jumped into the chat check-in, I want to say thanks to BMX Rocks for sponsoring that chat check-in. We were talking about your motorcycle racing time. And you said it was a hobby that paid for itself. What were you doing, you know, daytime as a job to have that as the hobby?
MCS and Metalworks.
Okay. And what did Metalworks?
I mean, 3 years away. 2.5 years away from being able to say that I have welded for 50 years.
Damn, that's a long time.
And I enjoy it as much now, mm-hmm, as when I first began doing it.
Nice. Yeah. And what does Metalworks do?
Well, basically, we make a lot of swimming pool carts. There's a very big market for commercial pool cleaning stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's another tie into everything. I went to school with the guys that own this company called Hammerhead. Okay. And prior to that, two of the brothers raced motorcycles. One of them worked for my dad, and this is how we all became friends. Well, they developed this product. They have a patent on it, and we make all of their stuff. I mean, the proverbial going through a field of shit and coming up smelling like a rose. I mean, it's stupid. I sit in my corner at the shop with my TV on behind me, just welding pool carts all day.
Okay.
Don't have to deal with the general public. Perfect.
And when you say pool cart, just, I'm ignorant, I don't know, what's a pool cart?
Well, I don't know about up there, but down here, you'll see people driving around with a trailer, and they'll have it full of all these chemicals, and they'll have this cart on the back of the trailer. They pull up to someone's house, they unhook it, they go into the backyard, they clean the pool, do all the chemicals, everything, and that's just, it's stupid. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we're making 150, 200 carts a week, and they're 1,000 behind as of last week.
Wow. Okay. So this is, they tow it with their...
Yeah.
They tow it with their truck, car, whatever, and then, okay. Honestly, it's, when I was down there for work, where I stayed at, the guy that always came in, he just had a Ford Ranger with the bed rotten out of it.
Oh, yeah, and exactly.
It's all his cleaning parts or cleaning stuff in it. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, they're an interesting lot.
So do you ever weld one up with any Skyway mags on them?
Well, another funny part of this whole thing is when they when they developed the product to begin with, I hooked them up with Skyway to get wheels. And now Skyway was bought, I believe, by a company, a Mexican company, and they still provide all of the wheels to Hammerhead. It all just kind of goes.
It does. It does. I think if, is this something? Is this
that's
some,
it? That's it.
Oh, and there's the hitch they would hook onto the. Okay, doke. Yep. All right. Let me see if I can get that picture any larger. There we go. I'll go full screen on it. So this is what you weld up.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, let me go back off there. There we are. And we still got questions flying in too, Greg. Let me get back over here. And can never go wrong with the Skyway. Nope. That's pretty interesting. Is there anything else you guys make, build? Where
I mean, we for a time I was actually doing, you know, Cyclocraft handlebars every now and then.
Oh.
I would do that. Patrick's a nice guy, and you know, I did them just because I enjoyed doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and but now since the COVID deal began, the material is just crazy, and it's hard to compete with all of the stuff that's going on out there. So kind of stopped, and we'd still do some car stuff, Mustang stuff. Not a whole lot of that anymore.
No,
we've pretty much just tailed down. There's not enough hours in a day for us right doing carts. So
wow, who is that? What did you do? Like, what was the Mustang stuff you guys did?
We made K members, A arms, you know, suspension stuff, things like that.
Okay.
And pretty much just that was more of a, you know, pain in the butt. I'd rather just make cool carts. Enjoy myself.
Well, let's talk about this pro career you ended up having, racing bikes. When did this all take place? When would you got into the pro racing?
Had to be 78.
Was it?
Yeah. Middle 78.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I'm not sure because it was. I ruptured my spleen in 1980. And that kind of, admittedly, that kind of took the wind out of my sails. You know, I still had good days, but all of a sudden things were different.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds crazy, but I mean, you know, at the time you don't realize, but then as you get older, you start looking back on it and you went, you know, something changed, you know. Same thing happened, actually, you know, the same thing kind of happened, you know, with motorcycle racing, you know, because I got hurt there too. Still was okay. But then in 07, I had a heart attack. And, you know, you want to have something get your attention, that'll get your attention. And so then those kind of things, you know, change your attitude about things, you know. In my case, I don't get too, I mean, I still do every now and then, but for the most part, I don't get too wound up about stuff anymore. You know, somebody come in the shop and they have an emergency. Well, did you have the emergency yesterday? You know, so carry on.
Mm-hmm.
I got time for it, you know. And so, you know, things change. And I think if you ask any of the guys that raced, they can single back to something that happened that slowed them down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I mean, I was, I still did okay, you know, but I don't know if I would characterize it as a career, you know. How I was a kid having the best time of my life,
Well,
you know.
hey, that's
Still having the time of my life. What the hell?
yeah. What were some of the pro like what was some of the pro national championships and number ones that you can recall?
Got one. The
Okay.
first number one. I got that. And then I was in the top 10, lurked around there, you know, but it the NBL stuff, it got, you know, there was a transition with NBL and ABA and so forth like that. And at a certain point, you know, people kind of drew a line. And this group was staying with NBL, and this group was staying with, you know, ABA. And every now and then everybody would meet, would conveniently meet at a race someplace. We're all still friends. I mean, it, you know, wasn't anything like that. But I think there was a lot of, you know, for me looking back on it, there was a lot of depth in the pro class back then. It wasn't real big, wasn't crazy big, but there was depth. And you know, anybody, I mean, you had Stu, you had Greg, you had Harry, that and Pat and Brent and Brian, of course, that were, you know, always there. But then there was always guys that you didn't expect that would all of a sudden rear their ugly head, so to speak. And I think that's where I fell, quite honestly. You know, I was there and, you know, I was having fun again,
What
you
was
know.
your title or your championship you had? I missed it when you said it before we started.
The first NBL number one pro, and you know, then I had, you know, obvious,
Okay.
you know, amateur title, so to speak, you know, NBL also, and then JAG World Championship, I won there. You know, again, it was just, yeah, I don't
Yeah.
know. I don't
Okay.
know what to say about
Question burning up. How'd you get the nickname Poodlehead?
Greg Hill.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
Well, there was a period of time that, you know, everybody had long hair, mullets, whatever, back in those days. Well, when you wore a helmet all day long, when you took your helmet off, it looked like crap. So we all were, I believe we were at Sherry Hanna's house, Kathy Hanna's sister, and Sherry did hair. And lo and behold, me and a few of us, we ended up with perms. And that's how it started. Because then you took your helmet off and your hair looked like crap. Well, it looked like crap to begin with.
You had a perm.
And so that's where it came from. And then
How
everybody.
long did you wear the poodle head hairdo?
God, it had to go until end of my motorcycle racing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, now I'm bald. I mean, it, you know,
Did you ever rock the mullet though?
not like those guys.
Not
No,
like those guys. No.
no.
No,
No.
no Tennessee waterfall haircut like them guys.
No, nothing like that. That's all Greg, though.
So I was reading up. You're also inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2005. How was that for you?
That was cool. It was, for your peers to, you know, vote you in to do that was cool. For me, it was a little extra special in the sense that, you know, the NBL was kind of on its, well, it was pretty much gone by that point. And because of that divide that I talked about, I didn't spend a whole lot of time in the ABA. And So that's kind of how that went. Though during all of that time, I was friends with Clayton. I have a picture somewhere in all of my stuff that after my dad and Tedesco had their falling out with NBL, Clayton have a picture of my dad and Clayton here at the house in Pompano. So I always had that little connection. Clayton was involved in motorcycle racing also. So that was kind of something we would talk about stuff. Because by that point, I was already off racing motorcycles too. So, but then when I was inducted, it was nice. It was very nice, very nice. Humbling, very humbling for me.
Very cool. Got a couple questions here for you. Kind of like to ask these. What are your thoughts on the current state of professional BMX racing in your view?
I went to the World when it was in Rock Hill, and Garrett Deuce had asked me if I would write something for his website in Europe. And mean, those guys are fast. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, buts about it. But it's at the same time, it's so different from, I mean, I can only compare what we did, what we were doing then. The worst part about the state of the sport itself, from my standpoint, is you don't know who anybody rides for. You don't know what bike they're riding. You can't even tell what dirt jerseys they have on. You know nothing. And then when a pro moto, when they run the pro motos, those guys all disappear off into wherever, and you never see them. And so, from my standpoint, there's no bang for your buck, which the sport has always had that issue, back in our day also. You couldn't get mainstream company, whatever, involved in the sport. Well, part of the problem is there's no bang for your buck. My dad, for what people want to say, my dad was a purist. My dad fought tooth and nail that when you got to the point where you're at the grands, novices were not should not be at the grands. Novices should have to work to make it to the grands. And by doing so, you had to be an expert. So it gave them something, to shoot for. Now you just show up and there's nothing really for you. I believe that. I think, again, I've said this a few times also, that if I was a company trying to do this, if I was to give USA BMX a bunch of money to sponsor Race X, when one of my riders was on the gate, you're going to slow down and give me my money's worth. Just firing motors off and firing motors off and fire and never really saying anything. You're never gonna get somebody to pony up and get involved. There was a when I was racing motorcycles, there was a thing that the AMA used to provide riders if they asked for it on how to get sponsors. And one of the things they had was in there was a formula for cost per impression. And so you had, you've got TV coverage, and they have people that sit there in front of these motorcycle races, car races, NASCAR, IndyCar, whatever, and they would sit there with stopwatches. Mm-hmm. And when, I'll just use Target as an example, because sure. I'm thinking Chip Ganassi, you know, when the Target car was shown on TV, boom, they'd hit the stopwatch and they're writing down time. How much television coverage mm-hmm. did that get? And then they could tell you, hey, for this 2-hour race, the Target logo was on the screen for 33 minutes. So they can equate a number to it. Mm-hmm. Can't do that in BMX.
I don't, it would be in, if you did, it would have to be in minutes, I would assume, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it goes to the same thing when you've got, you know, these pro guys, mm-hmm. And you can't tell who they ride for. And I think part of that is the U.S. Olympic stuff. Mm-hmm. They won't let them do that.
Right.
You know, well, again, you know, who's paying the bills? That's kind of how I looked at it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, maybe that's wrong, but that's how I looked at it. I wasn't.
No wrong opinion here. That's, and you bring up a great point with the cost on impression, right? I think Chase has done a good job with branding themselves with their teal and black. But there are other teams out there that use the same colors. But you know, back to your point, like how do you find them afterwards and this and that, things like that. You know, I think they've kind of taken a model of that Formula One vibe with their team. But if you move down the ring from them, it's hard a lot of times to keep up on who's who, where they're at, even throughout the year. And so if you were to wave a wand and fix it, what would be the one thing that you right now would fix in the pro class?
I think, I don't know about the pro class. I think the best thing that could happen to BMX
yeah.
in general is get rid of all lawyers.
Okay.
I say this somewhat very serious. Lawyers in this country have ruined virtually everything. Mm-hmm. Back in our day, you know, we would go to a racetrack 3 hours before the race ever started, mm-hmm. and we'd have our favorite jump backwards. Because number one, the tracks weren't locked up. People could ride on the track during the week. Mm-hmm. They could do this, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, someone got hurt. You know, it sucks. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, these things happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and so what happens? All of a sudden, now none of the tracks, when everything's done, it's over with, gates are locked, you can't do anything, you know, and, you know, the worst word used at a BMX track is can't. You know, hey, everyone started riding bicycles and jumping stuff because it was fun. Don't start telling them they can't do it. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon they go away, which, if you look at, you know, and I can only say it for, you know, up at Okeele, that's where Alex was pretty much racing, is, you know, once you got over 14 years old, there really wasn't anybody there.
Yep.
And I think a lot of that, and I think it also goes back to which is why freestyle and, you know, just free riding, whatever right. you want to
yeah.
call it, became so big, is most 14, 15, 16-year-old kids, they spend all day at school listening to teachers tell them not to do this. You can't do this, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. So what do they do on the weekend? They go to the BMX track, and nowadays that's all they hear too.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty soon, I'm going to go ride over to the beach and grind on some walls.
Yep. Or, you know, head to the pump track, skate park, whatever right. It is.
I think that's, you know, that's been the biggest, I think that's the biggest detriment in the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's, you know, I've been gone a long time, obviously. You know, I still look at it from afar, so to
speak.
Yeah,
that's why we like asking that question, because it's kind of like a fresh eye review, right? So a lot of times we're really engaged in it.
Yeah, I just think, everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah. You touched on a few of these, but how can the sport get back? And again, you touched on this. How can the sport get the big sponsors back in?
Slow it down.
You think they need to eliminate some of the lower proficiency classes at the higher caliber races?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But what do they have to shoot for?
We have that discussion a lot, right? You know, the novice class at Grands or even at your national level. And we've had guests on from the international community, from outside of the States, where, you know, that doesn't transpire. You work your way, you earn your way there. So I think that's a very interesting take on it. And I've been one for it because, one, it shortens the day, but I feel like by shortening the day, you can make those pro classes more spectacular by, again, to your point, slowing it down. And, you know, when you see the pro spectacular, that's what they're doing at the pro spectacular. They slowed it down, give it its own slot, laser light, fog machines, you know, special announcers and things like that.
Yeah, they make it a spectacle.
Yeah, and, you know, even in an outdoor, it's not hard to do to slow it down. You still can run on your hour and a half or 45-minute intervals. I forget what they're racing at the Nationals. You can still jazz it up every time you get there with something.
I get it. It's all when it comes right down to it. I mean, you got to generate cash to run the whole thing. That's
yeah.
But man.
Well, there's the trade-off, right? So could you eliminate, you know, maybe the novice class? And the opens are always a huge topic too. But if it meant you were able to procure a large, let's say, Chevy trucks or Tesla or something like that, where, you know, you got a big chunk of money and you could, you know, eliminate that and make this more prestigious.
Going back to the 80s, you know, ESPN, mm-hmm. You had the ESPN series. All right. Well, and that was, you know, Rennie was involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
And then even later than that, Magoo had started that, it was a downhill.
Oh, he did the Triple Crown, ESPN yeah. Downhill.
Right. Now, you know, it's easy sitting here on the outside looking in, you know, but it would seem like that as much money as those of us on the outside think that is being generated, that they could take their money and buy. I'll tell you a story.
Yep.
1990. At the Miami Grand Prix motorcycle race in the streets of Miami, Ralph Sanchez, who's the guy that built Homestead Speedway, he called CBS and said, how much is it going to cost me for an hour prime time on Sunday, 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock? Because we want live
mm-hmm.
this race live. CBS threw him a figure. He wrote him a check. And then he sold the advertising.
Somebody else just did this.
And that was the number one rated show in the middle of football season. So why couldn't, and I've said the same thing about RC car racing. So, why can't, USA BMX call ESPN just as a, and say, we want an hour of time. They got pickleball.
They have what's the other game with the bean bags, the cornhawk,
Right. Cornhole.
cornhole,
Yeah.
yeah.
All you just got to have somebody with some stones and say, we want this time slot. Do you want? And we'll sell the advertising. And now you've got companies, Chase, we'll use them as an example. Now they can justify, hey, this a 30-second commercial or a minute commercial, whatever, And now the other side of that is now you've got some laundry detergent company because all of the kids get dirty, all their clothes got to be washed. You can start running with it, but unfortunately, I think people get comfortable in the stuff, the way they do things, and so forth like that. They get older, so they don't want to do it. That's my case. That they don't fulfill that. They don't push it to that next level. That's what I see.
All right.
Because I mean, just what was Greg's comment? The 18-wheel
18-wheel ATM on or 18 the 18-wheeler ATM. I can't remember what he said. Yeah. The ATM on 18 wheels.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, admittedly, I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and badmouth USA BMX because, hey, they're doing it. I
Yeah.
mean, they're the ones doing the work, so you can't begrudge them, making any money, So,
Which is a funny
but the flip.
topic right there.
Wanted to continue on. They've got to think outside the box,
Right. Agree. Well, let's shift it up. You want to have a little bit of fun with some rapid fire questions?
Oh God, here we go.
Always a good time. All right, it is our rapid fire round. And this is going to be a good one. Following rapid fire, we're gonna jump into the trivia. And so Lightning Around is brought to you by 110 Nutrition. If you guys haven't done it, make sure you check out their new product, Super Greens. They got the fresh berry. All right. This is going to be a real rapid fire because it's only me in the studio, so I'll get to be able to ask you all the questions. All right. Here we go. The last movie you liked so much you watched it twice.
Wow. Maverick.
Damn, I just watched that one for the second time myself. It's pretty good. Favorite sport other than BMX?
RC car racing.
Yep. One place you'd like to travel to that you haven't been to yet.
Santorini.
Say that one more time.
Santorini.
Nice. What was
One of
the
the Greek.
last thing that you Googled?
The amount of entries for the race in Italy.
Right. That makes sense. Favorite thing that you like to do on a date with your significant other?
I'm thinking of what she's sitting out in the living room thinking. Just relax.
Do
The world is tough enough.
you? Yeah.
This adult sucks sometimes. Just not adult for a little bit,
Right. Let's see here. Is your bed made right now?
Yes.
All right.
Next question is, did I make it? No.
That's nope. The next question is, do you believe in the supernatural?
Supernatural. I would lean towards yes.
Okay. If you could transform into any animal, which one would it be?
A pug.
A pug. Great answer.
I have three of them running around here.
All right. You still have a bike, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So if you could choose for your next bike, aluminum, carbon, or chromoly, which would it be?
Chromoly.
Yep. If you could go back in time and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
Wow, that's good. That's good. That your parents are smarter than you think.
That's a great answer.
I keep telling Alex, you're going to be shocked that the older you get, the smarter your mom and I are going to be.
It's true. Your favorite guilty pleasure?
Gummy bears.
Oh, that's a solid one. If you had to change your first name, what would you change it to?
Poodlehead.
Your favorite type of music you enjoy listening to?
Probably country.
All right. Your favorite type of cookie?
Chocolate chip.
All right. Would your 12-year-old self think that you were cool?
Yes.
All right. Here's a good one. Mike Miller sent this one in. I like this one. Because since he sent it in, I've been making a habit out of turning the other way. You pull into a parking lot to park. You go down a row. There's empty spots on both sides. Do you park to the left? Do you park to the right?
To the right.
To the right. All right. That's a change. What's your favorite holiday you like to celebrate?
The problem with holidays is they interfere with work and racing season.
That's so true. That racing season will get you.
So, Memorial weekend.
All right.
Means something.
And the last one for you, your favorite Wednesday Night Live BMX show.
Oh. All things BMX. Come on.
All right. Great job. You ready for a little trivia question now for the audience here?
Uh-oh. Okay.
Now, you are not, because this is based on something you had said during the interview earlier on.
Yeah, but I still might get it wrong.
That's true. Once we get some of the answers in there, I will defer the question to you, and you can answer. But tonight, you were playing for one of our prize packs here, and this is what's cool. So at the beginning of the show, we were talking about the race that, the whole shot event that ATB is putting on the 30th. Out at Richfield Park PMX here in Michigan. So the prize pack this evening is going to be donated to that event on behalf of the winner. And we've got here, I'll go full screen on this one. So got this cool hoodie from Bombshell. That's going to go in there. This is going to be donated on our winner's behalf, along with our prize pack, sticker pack here, and some danger snacks from Mr. Dorsey. And we also have a ball cap in there too, from the Haro team. That's going to go in there. So that'll be donated on the winner's behalf. And we're going to be using it for Mystery Motos. And also on that note, Greg had won a few weeks back, and he's going to donate his prize pack with this awesome getaway hat and a Bombshell shirt. He's going to donate that to the event also. So thank you, I appreciate it. And here is your trivia question. What movie inspired Greg's early on two-wheeled adventures? And, yeah, bonus, if you can name the movie star in that. All right, so once again, trivia question for Melissa's trivia question for this evening. What movie inspired Greg's early on two-wheeled adventures? And we got some answers coming in. Bonus, though, can you name the movie star? So we've got some correct answers in there. Excuse me. And I also want to let everybody know about next week's show that we have coming on. We have Nick Scott joining us from Rad Awards. He's also the track director at Rad Canyon BMX, and he'll be joining us to talk all things BMX. Pretty excited to have him on. And this past weekend, Greg, I actually won one of the Rad Awards at Waterford Oaks State Finals. This thing's it's pretty cool. I didn't get first. Oh, thrill Billy got me, but really cool award they did. And this is the second place. Really cool. It's hard to see, but in the back of it, it tells you they have it on there raised, you know, 2022 State Finals, Waterford Oaks. Rad Design's going to be on. Nick Scott will be joining us next week on the show. They've been doing a lot of really cool awards. I don't know if you've seen, well, they do the pendants there. They do like mini belts. Have you seen the rings yet, Greg?
No.
Oh, they did.
Send me his info.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
Because we need to get some awards for a couple races coming up for ours. Maybe he can do those.
Oh, yeah. He's got some, did some medallions earlier on for a state qualifier that I was at. Our track close to us, Toledo Speedway, they did these rings. give me 1 second. I'll pull up the rings because those turned out really, really neat. There we go. State Rad Awards. Yeah, I'll get you his information once we jump off the show. Sure. But make sure you stick around with us. So hold on. I'm multitasking here. You guys don't go anywhere. Here we go. Show you guys. Here's the rings. Pretty cool. Pretty.
Yeah.
All right. Let me get back into my chat stream here. So, our question was, what was the movie that inspired you for your early two-wheeled adventures? And the answer is, Greg?
On Any Sunday.
And the movie star?
Steve McQueen.
Yes. You know what's funny? looks like, let me go back in here. Wow, we got a lot of right answers. And it looks like Michael Lynn is first one in. And for the bonus, it was Brian Fell had Steve McQueen on there for the movie star. So we're going to have her name on that. And both of those prize packs are going to be given away as we're going to use them as mystery motos for the kids that are in the Whole Shot Challenge event. Greg, man, it was great chatting with you, Greg. I want to hand it over to you for any round, kind of anything you wanted to tidy up, any thanks, any shout outs, anything like that. And before I toss it over to you, can we welcome you back on and have you back on in the future for Moto 2?
Oh, absolutely. I've enjoyed myself. I've been looking forward to it. I think you do a great job, Justin. Thank you. I'll give and Melissa gets, I'm sure, more credit than you do. I know how that works also.
That's right.
No, absolutely. It's been a good time.
All right. Any thanks and shout outs you want to give?
I got to thank my wife. She lets me be me. Yeah, I'm just enjoying life. Just trying to have fun.
Well, it was a pleasure spending an hour and a half with you this evening. We look forward to having you back. Don't drop off. All right. If you can just hang out for a few minutes in the Zoom that you're in. And, that way we can, get a date and get Moto 2 set up for you. And I want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. It was a lot of fun. Manning everything this evening. It's a good time. From all of us here at the All Things BMX show, I want to say thank you for you guys tuning in this evening. There was crazy numbers. Craig brings the heat when he comes on his show. And everyone listening to the podcast or watching on YouTube, Twitch afterwards, we really, really appreciate it. You can also watch on Facebook. And a big thanks to our guest, Greg, and family for joining us. You guys, good night and God bless.